Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is number 947B. The B's are always the guest segment, the A's, the news of the week, and what it means to you. And we have a spectacular guest on this week. I can't put this book down. It is called Bottle of Lies, The Inside Story of the Generic Drug Boom by Catherine Eban. And Catherine is K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. Eban is E-B-A-N. I'm going to quickly get to that. She's an award-winning Fortune reporter, as well as has written for Vanity Fair, Self, The Nation. She's an author of Dangerous Doses, the story of cops, counterfeiters, and the contamination of America's drug supply. She formerly worked as a staff writer for the New York Times and New York Observer, educated at Brown and Oxford, where she was a Rhodes Scholar. She tells a compelling, if scary story, scary for those of us who have been supporting the FDA and who have served on advisory committees for it, scary for those of us who are physicians prescribing drugs, knowing that well over 90% of the drugs that our patients receive are, in fact, generic drugs, that is, no longer under trade name, no longer made by one company. And in fact, as one of my patients said to me 2 days ago, or on Friday, he said, Mike, I used to take X drug and it worked beautifully. I now take the generic versions. It doesn't work. I've even written the company. I phoned the company trying to get it. They stopped making it because of the price difference. So I can't even get what I really want, no matter how much I'm willing to pay. And Catherine, thanks for coming on. And that's kind of the tale you tell in this book.
Right. So Bottle of Lies takes readers deep into the overseas manufacturing plants where the majority of our generic drugs are made, and exposes widespread fraud at those plants aimed at making failing drugs look as though they are passing. And that data is then given to the FDA for approvals, and of course, we are all taking these drugs.
Well, what I can't understand, when I've done work with the FDA, for the FDA, and I've taken a drug through the FDA process, they required so many checks, balances, and oversight on each of the original study forms that I actually can't believe this could happen. And you tell the story about Mylan, and I guess it's Ranbaxy that is so compelling. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, it's really extraordinary some of the differences in how, you know, brand name drugs are required to go through the system, the approval system as you describe it. Generic drugs are really regulated somewhat differently in that you have to submit an abbreviated drug application tested on a couple of dozen volunteers. But what the key difference is that the majority of those drugs are manufactured overseas. And instead of just showing up announced in those manufacturing plants, as the FDA does in the U.S., they announce their inspections in advance, which gives the plants opportunity to clean up, fabricate data, and so that the plants that the FDA is inspecting do not reflect the true condition of what's going on there.
Now, but apparently in some of what, for example, at least I understood the way they had to test bioequivalence was that the drug actually had the same levels in the blood or in tissue in animals and the same level of blood in humans. And what you show is that much of this data was fake.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So, for example, you asked about Ranbaxy. I tell the story of a young engineer who was working at Bristol-Myers Squibb, and he was recruited to go to Ranbaxy, which was India's largest drug company. The fellow's name is Dinesh Thakkar. And he gets to Ranbaxy, and his boss says to him, "I'm worried about the quality of the data that the company is submitting to regulators. I want you and your team to investigate whether the data supports the applications we're submitting." And Dinesh Thakkar basically stumbles into Ranbaxy's secret, which is that it has fabricated data for over 200 drug products in more than 40 countries around the world. Just made it up. And in countries where there's even less regulation, like in India and some Asian and African countries, they didn't even bother doing any testing at all. They invented the data. They used brand name drugs and tested those and submitted data from those as if those were their drugs. And the data, the information,
So what they did is essentially they got the original drug, the drug that got the original approvals, most of which were made in the U.S. or in Puerto Rico, although now it's getting diversified even from those sites, but most of which were made in U.S. areas and in U.S. chemical plants. And they actually used those drugs as if they were theirs. They crushed the drug, put them in their own capsules, in some cases, relate. And so we got to find out how you got this data, which I can't believe you got. But anyway, this it's a compelling story. And it also says to us why a lot of our drugs, at least why some of our patients aren't responding, and why the patients say that when they were overseas, it was even worse. They had to get the drugs shipped from America to even have a chance of them working. And even antibiotics in other countries are essentially diluted so that there's less chance of them being effective and helping the person cure a disease.
That's absolutely right. You know, and some doctors are skeptical about this, and they're basically saying, oh, generics are exactly the same as the brand. But the doctors, you know, who prescribe drugs that require very precise dosing, like cardiologists, endocrinologists, they have been aware of these issues for some time. I mean, they have found that it is hard to stabilize their patients when they're switched to certain generics. And in the book, I tell the story of several cardiologists from the Cleveland Clinic, which you're familiar with, of course, who were having this difficulty and even found that heart transplant patients were suffering from organ rejection when they were switched to a certain immunosuppressant that was manufactured in India.
So now part of this comes from the culture of never questioning the superior. But obviously, a lot of this is seems to me it's just plain fraud. Meaning, it seems hard that a culture of fraud. I mean, if you will, from until I started reading this book, we all know certain drugs, generic, have problems such as Synthroid and some of the others. But I never thought it would be widespread fraud. I thought it would just be poor manufacturing technique of one batch to another, or poor mixing in the large chemical vat compared to a smaller one or whatever. But this is, it's actually between China and India, it's huge fraud. And Brazil, I guess.
Yes, it is huge fraud. And, you know, I had done a big article for Fortune magazine about the drug company Ranbaxy, which ended up, that was India's largest drug company. It doesn't exist anymore. It ended up pleading guilty to 7 felonies related to falsifying data. But my question when I set out to report the book was, you know, how should we think about Ranbaxy? Is it an outlier or is it the tip of the iceberg? And what I uncovered is that the data fraud in these companies is really widespread, So, for example, there is an FDA investigator in the book that I follow named Peter Baker, and he figured out how to inspect the computer systems in these plants, where he found evidence that the companies were pre-testing the drugs to see if they passed or failed, then tampering with the parameters of the tests, and then officially testing them to get passing results. He found in 86 plants that he inspected over 5 years in India and China, he found some element of fraud or deception in 67 of those plants, around 4/5. This is a huge global problem.
So now let's talk about how we fix it. By the way, just so you know, and I was coming out, I think, last Wednesday night out of my office at the Cleveland Clinic, get probably 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. at night. And Harry Lever, who's a friend, stops me in the hall and starts talking about the fraud in generic drugs. And at that point, and because I had just told him about what a patient said about one of the drugs, and I did not realize he was one of the, but you quote him as one of the people who has found relating to the, as you can tell, I do read the books. I love reading books. I try and read the book before I do the interviews. And this is a great one.
We're talking
to Catherine Eban. No, this is Catherine Eban, E-B-A-N, Bottle of Lies, The Inside Story of the Generic Drug Boom. So now, how do we fix the problem? Because there must be a rule that the FDA must have to tell the plants overseas. I mean, in other words, how do you fix this problem?
So, remarkably, there is no rule that requires the FDA to give advance notice to these companies. And they have done this simply to make the logistics easier. So the first, and in fact, they ran a pilot program for a year and a half where they did no notice and short notice inspections in India and found incredibly terrible things in these plants. I believe that they don't want to do unannounced inspections because essentially they don't want to know. Because if they really uncovered all of this stuff in India, it would have huge implications for the U.S. drug supply.
Well, in other words, it would shut down drug supply for a number of years until someone made it correct.
That's right. I mean, when they find, clear evidence of fraud, then they have to impose what's called an import alert on the plant, which means that they can't ship into the U.S. market. And if that happened enough, it would certainly add to the really serious drug shortages that we have. So part of the problem is that we have no plan B for these drugs. We have become completely
so reliant. How are we going to, how do you think we can fix this?
Okay. So there's a number of steps that need to be taken. So first of all, the FDA has to overhaul its foreign inspection program. It has to end pre-announced inspections and do unannounced inspections at every single plant that wants to ship drugs into our market. That's number one. Number two, we need price regulation of brand name drugs in the U.S. Part of the problem is that none of us can afford brand name drugs, and it has increased our reliance on these low-cost generics manufactured overseas. And then we need to find a way to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. We just have to do it. I mean, it's a national security risk at a certain point. We make almost none of our own antibiotics anymore.
Now, what happened when I was growing up, at least growing up in medicine, I guess in the 60s and 70s, Puerto Rico had a strong tax advantage, and all the drugs made for the U.S. a lot of the drug companies had established plants in Puerto Rico. What happened to those? I missed that if you have it in the book.
Yeah, I don't go into detail about Puerto Rico, but basically manufacturing has been moving further and further away from FDA headquarters in Maryland. Part of the reason for that is because companies are trying to evade regulatory scrutiny. And even though on paper they are regulated by the same standard, the fact of the matter is that, you know, FDA investigators are an infrequent presence in these overseas plants. They show up announced, and the time that they have at each plant is really shortened compared to what they could do in the U.S. or in Puerto Rico. So, you know, I think at this point, bringing drug manufacturing back to Puerto Rico would be a great thing, and in, you know, and fully on the U.S. mainland, terrific.
I want to thank you. We're talking to Catherine Eban. I'm thanking her both as a guest. This is podcast 947B of You, the Owner's Manual, but also writing this book, Bottle of Lies, not only in exposing the problem with the generic drug industry, and it's a huge one. You read the book, it scares the living heck out of you. If you're a physician, you read the book and you're a patient who needs a drug, it scares the living heck out of you. You need a life-saving drug, and you think you're going to go to Africa or Latin America or Asia and get the same drug if you get sick, it scares the living heck out of you. So for travel, it's almost like you've got to take your own supply of drugs that you might need for infections or something else that occurs in another country with you. If you read this book, it scares the living heck out of you. And it's no way when you go to China and people or India and people want American drugs, American manufactured drugs, you can understand why. Bottle of Lies, the inside story of the generic drug boom. It's going to take us, Catherine, if I read what you've said and listen to what you said correctly, it's going to take us 20 years to straighten this out if we started immediately. As well as probably increase drug prices for a while in the U.S. I've read a lot of books on medicine and mysteries and science fiction, all of which somewhat could scare you, but this is real and this is a great book. It should be. Everyone must read this book, Catherine Eban, Bottle of Lies, about as scary as it gets. And congratulations. First of all, people who are listening to this, this is a book you want to read for the facts in it, but it's also just compelling and it reads so fast. It is a great book. Thanks very much for being on the show and thanks very much for writing this, Catherine.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to talk to you today.
My privilege. Thank you. Next week, another You, the Owner's Manual News of the Week and what it means to you, and another great guest.